Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're watching and listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. My very special guest today is old friend Masaki Miyagawa. Masaki has been doing a lot of research and investigation the last several years, kind of slipped under the radar for a number of reasons, but that helped facilitate the whole researching effort because he didn't have as many distractions as people in our field tend to do. Tend to have. So without any further ado, Masaki, welcome back to the Switch.
Hey James, I'm glad to be back on. And you know what? I think you need to get extra at the jump of the show. Props to James Bartley, because if you're listening to James Bartley, you're deep in. You want to know the real deal, because I came upon James years ago, and James himself has a lot of great information, but also you provide a great platform to hear other voices that would probably otherwise not be heard.
Thank you. I want to get as much raw data as possible, and then I let my listeners and viewers decide for themselves, right? And oftentimes, the caliber of guests we have on, they hit it out of the park. We just had Judith Koba on the show, and sadly, she had given us an update, a status update on what's going on with Germany and the EU in general, and the whole continent, for the most part, has sunk. Degraded to just shocking levels due to immigration and communism, what have you. And on top of all that, they're just continually poking Putin in the eye, right? And here we are now. And this reports I've been getting, and thanks to you and others, we see a similar dynamic, surprise, surprise, in Japan, which for a long time have been somewhat regarded as somewhat of a homogeneous society. To be sure, there are some differences in, different parts of Japan, Okinawa. They may not all think of themselves as one unified block, but from the outside looking in, it seemed to a lot of us that Japan had their own distinct culture, that one that stretched back thousands of years. And now we see the exact same thing happen with this mass influx of immigrants. So from your perspective, having spent so much time there in the recent past, what's going on there? With the immigration situation, what's going on with the defensive alliance with the United States vis-a-vis Taiwan, vis-a-vis the Philippines, et cetera, really revolves around China, this weird policy of containment that they're trying to do. We're trying to head off China at the pass at every turn, but I don't think that's going to work, and so much more. So without any further ado, Masaki, you've got the floor.
Well, James, the last couple of years, I've been going back and forth between Los Angeles and Japan. And Japanese descendants overseas, if you can prove that one side of your family came from Japan and you can verify the records, the Japanese government will give, they call Nikkei, the overseas Japanese, which are now into some places like fifth and sixth generation descendants. Some of them are half or quarter. Myself, I'm Japanese, parents on both sides, but they were born in America. You can get a 3-year visa with no work restrictions. So it was relatively easy for me to get a visa. But going there, it wasn't on my mind, this whole immigration factor. Japan today is still a monoculture. It's an ethno state of 97% Japanese. But James, even with 3%, which is nothing compared to any Western country, they're having problems. And I would say that the foreign worker population, or this movement, it started probably in the 80s or 90s. Companies like Toyota, the car company, they wanted to source cheap labor, but Japanese being Japanese, they didn't want pure foreigners. So they thought, there's 1 million Japanese descendants in Brazil. Brazil has the largest overseas colony of Japanese of any country in the world. So they said, okay, we'll bring the Japanese Brazilians. We ain't gonna pay them nothing. But it's going to help, corporation thinking. It's going to help our bottom line, more profits, right? So they brought these Japanese Brazilians to work in Japan, and they found out, oh, these are not Japanese, these are Brazilians. They're Latin people, they're very expressive, they have their noisy parties, the smelly barbecues, and they're dancing samba or whatever. It was a big cultural difference, but at the same time, a lot of them were part Japanese, so still there's some kind of understanding, even if it's very foreign, being a Brazilian Japanese. You understand that the Japanese have their ways, and at that time, it wasn't the full blown. But they're trying to push it to an open borders policy now, which is a different thing, right? Even Europe, America, Canada, Australia, the waves of immigration in decades past, it was just understood that you have to assimilate at some level, right? I would say the new wave of immigration, it probably started in 2014 when Merkel, she opened up the EU to these, they're under the migrant or refugee category, right? Where basically there's no expectation from the state or the society to integrate, which is it's a big difference, right? So in the 80s and 90s, and plus Japan at that time, Japan has been in 30 years of continuous decline or deflation. So, you're talking what is that like? It's over one generation, maybe a generation and a half of people just being ground down. So that kind of pride in the culture and the spirit, I mean, they're much poorer than what people would think, because when people think of Japan, Japan has an impressive culture. They produce excellent things. The quality of the products and attention to care. People don't think that it would ever happen to Japan that they would let themselves be invaded like Europe, Canada, America, Australia, and other places, right? But the fact of the matter is, James, Japan lost the war. People have to remember that. They lost the war against the America and the Allies. So since that time, they have been a client state of the US. So once you understand that, it makes a lot of sense why Japan could be manipulated into doing anything that the globalists want, right? So going back to the immigration trends, Japan, I think, is the first developed country to hit the aging population problem. They started aging faster than, or they hit that curve sooner than the other countries, right? But even now, China, especially because of their one-child policy, they're in a serious population decline. And actually, you've probably seen in the media that there's news stories about, oh, the Japanese aren't having babies and this and that. It's true, there is a population decline, especially if you go to the countryside, because people move to the big cities for work, right? But if you go to the countryside, I would say at least half the people, they're gray hairs, they're retirees. But if you go to the cities, you will see families. So, and if you compare the birth rate of Japan to the rest of East Asia, it's actually near the top. Korea's way lower. China right now, way lower. Singapore, it's pretty low. So, I think that there's also, in many ways, there's a media campaign against Japan. Especially if you see things like in the South China Morning Post, some of these papers, they're CCP controlled. So they're always like shooting arrows at Japan, just try to like bring the level down, make Japanese feel, because Japanese read these stories too, and just to cast things in a certain light as a 4D hybrid war, full spectrum dominance. And so Japan right now, The enemies are not just China, which is right next door, communist China, or they're not really communist, but it's like China Inc. now, right? But they have to worry about the globalists, and they have to worry about actually America. You know, because in the grand chessboard of World War III and what's going on, even that Japan being, even though the Japan is one of America's key allies, America would no doubt use Japan as a pawn to be thrown away in the war against China. So, immigration in Japan, I'll put it to you this way, James. Japan, no matter how they would want to change, and things are changing as time goes on. You do have foreigners having families, and they have half a Japanese, half Western, half Japanese, half African. You have a lot of mixed kids now, and there's the internet, right? So things are slowly changing, but at its core, Japan is not an immigration culture. There's nothing about Japan that has anything to do with immigration. It's a very ethnocentric state. And Japan, or let's say the early emperors in Japan, commissioned this book called the Nihon Shoki, which is this mythical book that has like Amaterasu in it, and it's a foundation myth of Japan, right? There's nothing in there about taking in foreigners from Europe or anywhere else. And Japan being an island nation, that informs why Japanese are the way they are. If you're in the mainland, whether it's on Europe or Asia, say Korea, China, there's always somebody coming in through town. You may not even speak the same language, but they need to trade, right? So they're like, what do you want? It's, you know, nowadays it's a calculator, it's this much. Here's the good, the money, bam, the deal's done, right? Whereas in Japan, it's an island nation. So the interactions with foreigners were far and few in between. And they also had this period of almost 300 years, what they call the Sakoku, where the country was actually completely closed, except for, I think they had an island near in Nagasaki where the Dutch could trade. So there's multiple factors, but I see Japanese, you know, and I'm Japanese American, right? Let me tell you, James, even me having two Japanese American parents, and then their parents came from Japan, right? I went to the Buddhist temple regularly all through my life. I will never be Japanese like they're Japanese. You have to be born there and look a certain way to really be Japanese. So it's even more of an eyebrow raiser when you see that the issue of mass migration, it's a major topic in Japan right now. I do think that they probably need to import some workers, but in it's obvious in the way it's being done now that it's, you know, we've been watching this. People that have been paying attention, we've been watching what's been happening in Europe and other places for a good decade or more now, right? And everything that happened in Europe is now happening in Japan, like every point, right? So one of the first things I did when I was setting up in Japan, within 2 weeks of entering Japan, when you hit the immigration at the airport, and you know you've done all your paperwork beforehand, but they hand you your foreigner resident card, and then you take that to the local ward office, which is basically a neighborhood area, and you have to register the address where you're staying. And when I was in there, it's like Babylon. You've seen everybody from all across the world. I didn't see no white people, but the typical immigrants now, there's Sri Lankans, there's Vietnamese, Nepalese. You actually don't see many Filipinos anymore because Filipinos speak English. So, you know, the pay in Japan is low. And the weakening yen has made it look even more unattractive. So Filipinos speaking English, they can go to Dubai, they can go to Europe, they can come to America, Canada. There's a lot better choices. So this is another problem, James. Japan as a immigrant destination, they're getting the bottom of the barrel pick because anybody that is that can speak English or has the option to go to, say, Europe or America or Australia, they're not going to go to Japan. The pay is low and the taxes are high. But many Indonesians, there's some Brazilians, but there's an increasing number of Islamics. So that it's the same issue that's in Europe and many other places, right? And I see that there's also this combination they call the Red-Green Alliance, where the leftists in Japan, just like the leftists in other countries, are aligning themselves with the Islamic bloc, right? And it's the same kind of thinking where if we get enough numbers, if we let enough migrants in, then we can form a voting bloc and take over. I saw this YouTube recently. It was called No Border, and people could look it up on YouTube. It's all in Japanese, but I think you can hit the subtitles. And so they had the so-called far right, but these are just people that want to keep the borders either closed or immigration down to an acceptable level.
Just people
And
that
then,
don't want to have their heads lopped off by a machete, basically.
then he had, so it was so, supposedly far right and far left. But these leftists were saying that to them, 50% foreigner population and allowing them to vote is acceptable. Well, that's suicide. That's suicide, right? So, Japanese, James, only about 2-3% speak English. It's one of the lowest in Asia, and it's actually gone down. Like the I would say the Gen X and older generation speak better English than the younger generation because the money has gone down so much that a lot of them, I guess you could say the society is kind of like turned even more inward because the confidence has gone down and it takes money to travel, right? So they've actually become kind of like even closed out the rest of the world even more mentally. And there's a joke that if you have a Japanese friend that speaks English, he's not a real Japanese. Because real Japanese, they don't speak English. At the core, Japanese, they love it, it's a funny thing. It's kind of like a split mentality where they're very interested in other cultures. But they like to take something interesting, take it into Japan, and then sort of like tinker with it and perfect it in their own way, So in that way, they're very open, but socially and inside Japan, I think they're very closed. I found that because I spoke to many foreigners traveling while I was in Japan, and I found that it was easier for me to connect and talk openly with Koreans from Korea, from South Korea, Chinese, whether from mainland or Singapore or Hong Kong. I could speak to the Koreans and Chinese much more honestly and quicker than Japanese, because Japanese, they're polite, but they're not naturally kind of open or friendly in that way. I would say it's very formal, and you could say it's the feudalism never died in Japan. It's very hierarchical and very formal, so you need a little looseness or openness to connect quickly or have an open conversation, right? So that being the fact, it's even more puzzling that you have this push for mass immigration now, right? So where are these workers going? Well, it's a lot of factory work, which the Japanese Brazilians did for years. But you're also seeing them pop up at the, they call the konbini or the convenience store. So the 7-Elevens, the Lawson's, the Family Mart. You didn't used to see foreigners working there, but now I would say at least half the staff, they're going to be non-Japanese. Some of them are very good workers and some of them aren't so great, you know? One of the things is that the in Japanese culture, the I don't know how you say it's almost like you have, I guess in Japanese culture in general, not just the workplace, you have to suppress your own needs or what you think for the group. You know, that's not always good, but the upside of it is it's not that Japanese people, they're always thinking, oh, I want to pick up that trash, or I want to always, you know, be on point and doing the itashimases and stuff like that. But it's just understood in the culture, that's what you do. And you can get bullied for being out of line, you know, like something as simple as your car. If you go to Japan, all, you know, I would say all the cars that I've seen, they're almost immaculate because they clean them regularly. Well, if your car is dirty, people might start talking about like what a disgusting person you are. So it's that kind of social pressure, right? People like Japan, but I think it can only be that way because it's Japanese with Japanese, right? Well, what happens when you have foreigners coming in and you're not paying them anything? You're paying them the lowest rate possible, right? Well, sometimes they're just not going to be as attentive, and then sometimes because they're not being paid anything, they're only going to work to the minimum, right? Whereas Japanese, there's just, you know, it's that social pressure that you're expected to do it a certain way. So it's interesting. Vietnamese, I don't know how it is in Australia, but in America, Vietnamese, I think, have a relatively good reputation, right? In Japan, they have a terrible reputation. You know why? Because Japanese are sourcing workers in Vietnam from the poorest areas. So these are people that, you know, these they're probably from the rural areas and so forth. These are people that people in Hanoi and Saigon don't even mess with. But it's sort of you get what you pay for. So Japan is sourcing. And again, it goes to that thing of even compared to Europe, I think the level of immigrants and migrants going to Japan, it's even a cut below because the pay is lower, right? I would say that the average wage is probably between $7 and $10 an hour in Japan. Now, the cost of living for rent, food, that's cheaper. But it's still $7 an hour, right? And then you have to figure that the taxes take probably half of that away. So, when COVID, this is kind of an example of the unintended consequences of this this extreme corporate mentality, the disastrous results that it can have, right? So, Japan. They started bringing in, I would say it was probably the around like 2015, something like this. And this happened under Shinzo Abe, who people kind of think of as the Japanese Trump. He was very pro Japan and all this on the surface, okay? He's actually the one that started to open it up more, you know? So when COVID hit, they had all these foreign workers who are doing things like working at the hotel, you know, the maids that clean the rooms, people that work at the konbini. Japan was closed for, I think, around 3 years. They had no plan for these workers. A lot of them got fired, right? Well, if there's one thing the Vietnamese have their survivors, right? So they said, okay, you ain't gonna pay us? We know what to do. James, they started forming criminal gangs and doing things like break-ins, stealing cars, all kinds of things, right? There's something that the Japanese and Vietnamese have in common. They both fought America, but the difference is the Vietnamese won. They're survivors, right? So I
They
kind of.
even fought off the Chinese in border clashes.
Oh yeah, they've been fighting the Chinese for like 1,000 years. So I you know, and again, with the immigrant population, most of them are not criminals, actually. Okay? It's a small percentage. But think about this. With a 3% immigrant population and a fraction of that being criminals, it's already a major problem in Japan. So what happens if it goes to 5% or 10% or 30% like Sweden, right? So actually, this is a personal story. I had to do some, I just came back from Japan. I had to close some paperwork out with the government. And I have a visa lawyer to go with me because my Japanese not that great. So have the visa lawyer come with me. Why not, right? 5 minutes late, 15 minutes late, half hour. Very unusual because for Japanese to be late, that's sort of an offense. And if they don't show up, something
You
serious
mean your
happened.
immigration attorney?
Yeah, my visa lawyer. So I knew something happened. So I said, no big deal. I'll go inside. I got Google Translate. I handled my paperwork, right? But when I talked to her later, James, guess what happened? A Vietnamese migrant broke into her house while she was in the house. And he was going down the street hitting all the houses. I'm assuming they caught him because otherwise, how would she know he's Vietnamese? But for me to hear this story personally tells you it's becoming a common thing in Japan and people are scared. And there's major protests happening. So things that are happening in Japan that didn't happen before, there's people stripping copper wire from farms, from anywhere that they can get it. It's a cost that, if you're living on a razor thin profit margin, oh great, and here comes another $1,000, $10,000 I got to pay just to repair things, right? And in Japan, the level of security is so low because there was never really a reason to have high security before that you can just bust in a lot of places very easily. Like the kind of like the door handles and the locks, it's a joke. On a lot of places, it's a joke. And I've even seen, now this is not common, but just to give you an idea, I've been in some small towns where there's the gate and there's literally a stick, like a wood stick holding the gate closed. And you just move the stick and you can get in, right? So if you're coming from a third world country or you're criminal minded, I mean, it's open season, right, in Japan. And especially Japanese, they're not aggressive people. They're very kind of like shy. And you've seen this with these influencers, the live streamers and such. They go to Japan for content just to abuse and harass people because the thinking is, well, they're not going to do anything anyway, right? Well, what if you're a real criminal? Right? So you're seeing the petty crime go up. Also, there's the Islamic factor. So, and I think it's not just Islam, it's the fact that because there's a blanket term Islam, but Muslims come from all regions, right? So the Kurds from the Middle East. And they span the, they have no state. There's like, I don't know, they're like Iran area, Iraq, Syria, Turkey, right? A lot of them come with Turkish passports. So There's not a lot of them. I think there's only a few thousand, maybe 3,000, 5,000, something like that, in the prefecture state next to Tokyo called Saitama. And there's a town called Kawaguchi where there's a Kurdish colony. And there was a leftist government at that time. It was only, the LDP, the Liberal Democratic Party, they basically ruled Japan continuously since post-war. But there was a time in the 90s they had a leftist government, and then they brought in these Kurds with the stipulation that if you worked for 6 months, you could get permanent residence. Permanent residence is difficult to get. Like I had a resident visa, but it's not, once you're permanent, you don't have to reapply all the time and this kind of thing. And the Kurds, they're along with like the Medes. These were like the, they're, if they're not the same tribe, they're very interrelated with the Scythians, which was like the Delta Force. They were the supreme warriors of the Persian Empire, right? And basically they're perfect for guerrilla warfare. I mean, that's what they were doing basically back in the day, except they were on horses, right? They're tribal people. They survived for that reason, right? And now you're bringing these people sticking them in the in Saitama, and they're living just like Kurds would in the Middle East, except they're in Japan, and they're not following the rules. They're doing all kinds of things. Now, I'm not saying all of them, but it has been the case that there have been rapes. And this is informative because, like I said, we saw what happened in Europe. Now compare what's happening in Japan. Same thing. It's almost a hands-off policy, or they're going out of their way not to prosecute. So there was this case of this Kurdish guy. He raped a Japanese schoolgirl. He got out on bail, and he raped another girl. And then I think he was sentenced for maybe 8 years or something like that. And the family was complaining it was too much because he didn't kill anybody, right? So, it's
That's what
when you, yeah.
the Muslims, Islamists, Salafist types in the UK and Europe are saying. It's just a woman. It's just a little girl. What's the big deal? White girls are there for us to do what we want, is what they're openly saying have been for some time in Europe
Yeah.
now.
And they're doing the same thing that's been done in a lot of other countries where the police departments in certain prefectures are, they're not reporting the nationality of the criminal, because if it becomes known, and it's already known to the public, like this is not good, but if the true numbers came out with such a small immigrant population, if it was known what the statistics really are, well, then that makes it a problem to bring more in, right? So then, it's sort of like what Gavin Newsom and the other blue state governors have done, that we're not going to prosecute crime because that may make certain groups look bad, right? And it's just a full court press, Besides the immigrants, you see a lot of United Nations and WEF logos in public. And the Japanese, they don't really understand what this, hey, most people in the West don't understand what it is, but I have seen, I don't know if you know the WEF, it's just like a this donut or circle logo with the rainbow colors. You'll see that a lot around. And a lot of it's coming out of Tokyo, because Tokyo is, it's a mega city. It's the business capital. I would say Tokyo is like New York, DC, and LA combined. It's the finance, the entertainment, and the government. And a lot of the top universities are in Tokyo, and the top corporations are in Tokyo. So once you indoctrinate the people that are going to become the presidents and CEOs. Then they go to the other parts of the country and then they start pushing these globalist agendas, right? So they're pushing that. They're pushing the LGBT thing, but I don't think it's really working. They're trying. But do you know Rahm Emanuel was the ambassador to Japan from the US? And he just left early this year. But you can imagine, I mean, he was Obama's right-hand man, and he's sort of like a pink mafia guy. So the LDP government, the ruling party, they're supposed to be center right. But in point of fact, because they've been the ruling party, they're basically installed, right? They have to do whatever America says at the end of the day. So the majority of the LDP, who are a bunch of nothing suck up stooges anyway, but they were still against pushing this gay rights bill. And then Rahm Emanuel publicly made a statement about Japan being regressive and this and that, and he got other ambassadors to. You gotta know, James, in Asian culture, that is ext that's a no-no, because the public humiliation, it's like to put that on Front Street. Those are things with Asians that you're supposed to handle behind closed doors. And then guess what? It got through somehow, even though the ruling party was against it, right? So they're pushing a lot of the globalist agendas that.
They pushed the gay rights bill, is what you're saying, despite the
But
pushback against it.
despite the fact that it shouldn't have passed, but America wants it, well, then I guess we're going to have to pass it, right? So all the globalist agendas that are happening everywhere else, they're happening in Japan. I think the difference is that it's so obvious and so out of place. And if you know what happened in Europe and everywhere else, it's obvious that Japan is under attack. And they have very little defense because they lost the war, and the whole modern Japanese system was set up by America, right? The Constitution of Japan was written in English and translated into Japanese, right? They had what they called the GHQ, the general headquarters, and they administrated the post-war Japan. And some of the first thing they did was they burned or they put certain books on the taboo list. So I don't know what those are, but there was many books that they got rid of. A lot of the most pro-Japanese people, for a good reason, were taken out of the government because it was Imperial Japan, right? But so there was a reason to take him out, but at the same time, you're basically chopping the balls off of Japan. And th this is the thing, people have to, even me, I didn't re realize what a captured state Japan is until I was actually there and then starting to look into this, because people have the image of, oh, samurai spirit and yakuza and all this kind of thing. When in point of fact, Japan is really a colony of the US, right? So GHQ, they also control the newspapers. They help set up the first radio and TV stations. So if you're talking about kind of like MK Ultra, get into people's minds. It actually worked for a long time, because I think that one of the reasons why they didn't completely destroy Japan is they probably looked at Japan as a great base to work against China, right? People now that didn't live through, because I kind of grew up in the last years of the Cold War, right? So the wall fell in like 89, right? Younger people may not think of it this way, but the whole anti-communist movement, or the energy and money put behind that, it has a lot to do with how the world was run post-war. It was the Cold War, right? So Japan, I think that America let Japan run as a manufacturing center. They said, you know, these Japanese are pretty sharp. They know how to do things and they can make us money, right? So they let Japan run until the 80s when Japan started surpassing America, right? There was like the whole car industry battle, right? Toyota started to take over Ford and so forth. You know, it was the 70s. America was making some terrible cars. And the reliability of, you know, what's the favorite vehicle of Islamic guerrillas in the Middle East? It's a Toyota pickup. It doesn't break down. So,
Yeah, the 50 caliber onto the back, and it turns into a technical.
yeah. So, Japan, you know, they were basically they were what kind of like China became in the last few years. They were basically unbeatable. The quality of the products and what they were doing, it was top notch. But then Reagan had the Japanese sign the Plaza Accords, which is agreement to allow the US dollar to devalue, which would then make American exports cheaper, right? So the yen doubled in value in a few years, and it led to the real estate boom, which was like one of the biggest real estate bubbles ever, except for the recent China bubble, right? And then the bubble collapsed, and then the Bank of Japan started just printing money, which is a big mistake. And that basically capped, that was it. It was by 91, Japan peaked in 91, and they've been going down ever since, right? So I guess it's over 3 decades now. And I think this also informs the Japanese mentality of, you know, worldwide now, there's a lot of the young people that are basically given up on the future, or you know, that thing, that mentality of like, okay, there's a for sure track, or there's a corporate track. I work hard, I get my diploma, I'll get a secure, stable job, and then I'm set, which doesn't really exist anywhere anymore, but that was a way that was Japan was working until the bubble popped, right? So the lack of confidence, being kind of stuck, and especially Japan being a very conservative culture, there's a lot of judgment or thinking about what's the right and wrong way to do it, you know? Or a lot of times they don't even think certain options are available to them. And being able to speak English and being on the internet is a key way now to get income, right? But Japanese don't speak English typically, and they're not very social people. So you're talking about social media. Well, you got to be social to be on social media, right? And factor in at a larger level, we were the best to ever do it. And we got shut down. So where are we going to go, right? That's why things, like I said, James, I think things have been kind of like turning inward in Japan. Some of the other things that are going on with the work and immigration issue are things that are happening in other places like Canada. So let's say for hiring a worker, the government is subsidizing the wages. So, would you hire a Japanese for $7 an hour? Or would you hire somebody from Pakistan or Indonesia or Vietnam where it's $7 an hour, but the government is subsidizing $3 or $4, which means you only have to pay half as much, right? Obviously, you're going to choose a foreign worker, right? So it's sort of a race to the bottom where Of course, it's a conspiracy. It's this Kalergi plan conspiracy to break down the nations, but at the same time, it's this reptilian corporate mentality of it's just the bottom line. But like the story I told you, James, okay, it's cheaper to hire a foreign worker, but is it really cheaper when you factor in how much does it cost? All the break-ins and the crime. There's all kinds of car accidents happening, and is it? I'll put it to you this way too. Is it every day? No. Is it every one of these migrants? No. But it's more than before. And if these foreigners weren't here, well, you wouldn't have this at all, right? Yeah. The universities, same thing. Japanese government is giving, I think it's like a $20,000 stipend, which is quite significant because a stable corporate job is probably $45,000 a year. And they're giving them a $20,000 stipend to foreign students. But Japanese university students get a big zero. So there's a lot of things, the Japanese people are looking at this, and I think it's a good thing you're finally starting to see protests. And again, that it's such a stark, obvious thing when it's not an immigration country. Like the whole culture is not, it's not optimized for immigration. And even with the increasing immigration, it's only about maybe, it's probably over 3%, but let's just say 3% foreigner right now. Any thoughts, James?
Well, I know in the West there
Right.
is this never-ending effort on the parts of so-called academia, the media, celebrities, what have you, to denigrate European heritage, to denigrate Caucasian identity, white identity, to make white people basically hate themselves and make it that much easier to eradicate them. They didn't, it seems to me, from what you're telling me, they didn't really need to do that in Japan. It was the insular nature of the Japanese themselves, their inability at a personal societal level to put up the necessary boundaries, and having the very system that they voted in undermining all their efforts, whatever efforts they may have of keeping up their racial identity, what have you. So do you see that over there, like hate yourself, you
Yeah, I
Japanese, the
mean,
way you do it in the West?
it's kind of subtle, but there's a joke that there's three people that hate Japan. There's the Chinese, the Koreans, and the Japanese. Japan is famous for their, to a high level, imitating, copying Western things, but then kind of like remolding it in a very Japanese way. So, like the car industry is one of them, right? They took the example, but then they tweaked it in a way that everybody loves. Fashion, same thing, right? But a lot of this comes from looking to the West as the prime example of how to live, how to, of the culture that succeeded, right? And in a way, that's one thing that put Japan maybe a cut above a lot of the Asian countries that were being colonized. Japan has a bad reputation. They did war crimes, but you got to put it in context of the times that Japan made the decision to create its own empire to avoid being colonized. See, that's the thing, right? So they created their own empire and started doing war crimes like all the Western empires did. But the thing is, it came to an end. They got nuked twice and they lost the war, right? So from that time, America allowed Japan to have a space to operate. But I think today you don't hear it as much. But there was a term, the Trilateral Commission, right? Well, that was supposed to be America, Europe, and Japan. if I remember correctly, right? But I don't think Japan has ever been as independent post-war or as strong as people think. Maybe this is a good point to give some context to the LDP and the Yakuza, who people think are badasses, but are actually, I would say, corporate CIA stooges. So, Japan, they opened up in 1867 officially, and that was a product. So they from about 1600, they had a okay, so they had a war, a civil war for several hundred years called the Warring States period. And then, well, Japan was sort of like Italy. It was a bunch of different states that were consolidating, and finally you got to two sides. The Tokugawa wanted to become the shogunate. It was a military dictatorship, right? So they ruled from 1600, and they closed the country at that point. The whole movie Shogun is about that, right? You had the Portuguese there, the Spanish, and I think the Dutch, right? The Japanese leadership got the word that the Catholics were going to take over Japan, the Jesuits, and the Portuguese, I think they miscalculated. They were maybe a little bit too open about their true goals, because they were taking slaves, especially like women. They were shipping Japanese women to Europe as sex slaves. That left a real bad taste in the Japanese mouth, so they closed the country, right? They were still getting intel before and after the war because of like Dutch and other foreigners. So they were aware of what was going on, even though the country was closed. And then in the 1860s, post-Civil War, you had Admiral Perry. He came with the so-called black ships, the Kurofune. And America said, you need to open for free trade, or we're gonna let the cannons loose and blast you. So Japanese decided to open, and as soon as Japan opened, they sent ambassadors and representatives overseas, especially to America and Europe, to learn as much as they could and bring it back. And within 20 years, they defeated Russia in the first international battle, modern battle that Japan fought. And you have to consider that Japan had been using the black powder musket until like 1860s or 70s. They didn't start using the modern cartridge ammo until that time. That's how closed Japan was. And a lot of the modernization, though, I've been thinking about this. I don't think it was just that the Japan were, because that's one thing about Japanese. They are so focused that if the order is given, but it's the order from above. See, this is the problem, James, right? If they don't have a strong man or a leader telling them what to do, it's very difficult for Japanese to organize. But they are so focused that in 20 years, they were able to basically go from 0 to 100 and become their own empire, right? But I think that the openness of the Westerners and the funding from London and New York was specifically to do what Japan did, is to take out Russia or provide another front to Russia, and then later on to
Fully
fight
goaded
China.
into war against Czarist Russia by the
So they, so
West,
they
by the
were
Anglo
they, they were being,
Zionist Empire.
because you think about it, why would Western empires or Western colonialists be so open to helping out an Asiatic nation, to use them as a pawn? I think that was the case. So, Japan, they modernized, and then they did their campaigns in, World War II, but around like 1900, they took Taiwan. They started making inroads to Manchuria and so forth. But that all ended at the end of the war. And interestingly enough, Shinzo Abe. So if people don't know Shinzo Abe, go look him up because he's even in some Trump memes because Trump and Shinzo Abe were very chummy. And when Trump supposedly got shot, right? There's memes of Shinzo Abe who got assassinated, looking from above, says, "Donald, it's not your time yet," and things like that. But Shinzo Abe, his grandfather was Kishi, who ran Manchukuo or Manchuria as his personal kingdom, basically. The Japanese Imperial Army colonized Northeast China.
Manchurian
And
Railway was this corporate conglomerate that the army worked hand in glove with in Manchuria to create the Manchurian incident.
That area of China, even though it's very harsh conditions, it gets very cold in the winters. It's similar to Ukraine. So if you've ever played strategy games like Axis and Allies, if you capture Ukraine, you're doing good. If you capture Manchuria, that's a point where you can do a lot of industrial production and so forth. So Kishi, he was a real, excuse my French, but he was a real piece of S, He had, I don't know if they were Yakuza in the modern sense, but he basically had these thugs that would beat Chinese people that are basically slave labor to keep them in line. He would be running Manchuria as Japan's colony. Supposedly it was its own state. They had the, if you remember the last emperor, Puyi, he's a puppet leader of Manchukuo. So Kishi, he would be running the daily colonizer activities, and at night he'd be whoring it up with the Chinese local women, right? He was under investigation as a Class A war criminal after the war, but they let him go. He was never formally charged, and he later became one of the foundational prime ministers of Japan and set the mold for Japanese politics and set the mold for the Liberal Democratic Party, which ran Japan basically continuously with a few breaks until the present day. It's the most powerful party, right? So this guy is basically one of these strong man, gangster, criminal types, right? That's the guy that formed the ruling party of Japan, James. So what does that tell you about the true character and nature of Japan? Because Japanese are people that they like to put off a perfect appearance, but the true nature is a lot murkier and seedy underneath. And the Yakuza are basically connected to the LDP and the corporations in Japan. So any kind of, let's say, I'll give you an example. Say that there's properties that Mitsubishi or Sony or some mega corporation, we want to build a headquarters there, but these people, they won't sell. Well, we'll call our guys and we're going to have them talk to these people. And you could do it the easy way or the hard way. We'll pay you out, or you know what I'm saying? They're sort of like the muscle or the street presence of the Japanese corporations. But why would America let a lot of these war criminals go? Because Japan got off a lot easier than Germany. They executed a handful of Japanese generals and so forth, but
Yamashita was thrown under the bus. He didn't deserve it. He tried to stifle Japanese army atrocities. He was Hama, who occupied and conquered the Philippines, was far more guilty, but not Yamashita, because what the Japanese naval commander did in Manila had nothing to do with Yamashita, because Yamashita ordered the Japanese admiral to declare Manila an open city. It was militarily at that point insignificant, but the fierce rivalry between the Japanese Navy and the Army, they told Yamashita to F you, and then they went and did their thing in the Battle of Manila. So yeah, Yamashita was an innocent man. He was simply a soldier, is all he was.
Well, a lot of the higher ups in the Japanese military, they knew as soon as America entered the war, they said, we might have a chance, but America's so huge. I mean, that was it, right? But I think the reasoning for allowing some of the key people in the Japanese Imperial Army to run post-war Japan was to use the Japanese intelligence networks as a stay-behind network in East Asia. Because at that time, who else had as many tentacles as the Japanese did in Asia? Nobody, right? So I think you could say that the LDP and Kishi and his coterie are similar to maybe the stay behind network in Germany. Like they had the Gehlen org, right? They're all the old Nazis. It's like, hey, the Nazis already have their intelligence networks all over Europe into Russia. So we'll just join with the CIA, we'll join with the Nazis, right? Same thing. I think a very similar thing happened in Japan. And what's do you remember the name of the network that they it was the P2 Lodge with Lucio Gelli, right? The Gladio, right?
The
Same
Gladio
thing in Japan.
network set up by NATO and the CIA, yeah.
Yeah, so if anybody doubts that these kind of secret societies and secret networks exist, just look at the Propaganda Due Lodge in Italy, because it had the judges, it had the police chiefs, it had the politicians, and they were all in this Masonic lodge that was deciding everything that was happening in Italy, right? So the Yakuza are not just corporate thugs for the big Japanese corporations, but they are no doubt also somehow connected to CIA, I think. You know? And you could even see from the pop culture angle, there was this boy band record label or promotions group called Johnny's. And it was created by this guy, Johnny Kitagawa, who was actually born in Little Tokyo, Los Angeles. And he moved to Japan, started the Johnny's company, and basically built Japanese pop culture. And so it's not just the boy bands, but if people know about Asian culture, these singers are also in TV ads that run all day. They're in the movies. They're on these stupid variety shows that play all the time. So it's like 360 deal of entertainment, right? Well, it came out, he died before COVID, so a few years before COVID, and some of these former pop stars started coming out. These are all guys, okay? He was molesting all the talent. And Johnny Kitagawa also did a number of events with the US Embassy. So what does that tell you about Japanese entertainment? What did we talk about the LDP, which is like the core, the dominant political party in Japan? Connected directly to, well, they lost the war. They were put in as puppets to run Japan, right? So they're running everything, James. They wrote the Constitution in English, had it translated into Japanese. They handpicked the worst. I mean, you talk about no morals. The worst guy from that was running Manchuria, his slave state, to put together the LDP and set the mold for post-war Japan. And then you have the Yakuza that's like tightly connected, So that informs a lot about why Japan has allowed itself to get in the state that it's in is because until this point, they really had no option. But what's happening now, James, worldwide, every country, is the post-World War II order. It's over. Is that Pax Americana, where it was peaceful for America. If you're living in some of these other countries, it was hell. But basically, America guaranteed, especially the maritime shipping, that they would, you wouldn't really have a problem with pirates and so forth. Like, it was a set economic system and a set order, and you know who was on the top. That's all ending now. Now, for Japan, that opens up a big question because they have allowed and relied on America. There's a number of American military bases in Japan. Japan is basically America's aircraft carrier off the coast of East Asia, right next to China, right? So if America's going down and Japan can no longer rely on America for defense, what does that mean for Japan? Right? And if the whole post-war order was set, not just in Japan, but Europe also is basically, NATO is basically America. And America dictates EU policy. People may not see it that way on the surface, but that's the way it is, right? Japan has to make some decisions because, just like we were talking about, how the West and especially places like England and America, Germany too, but UK and America stayed relatively independent compared to Germany. They had shared and financed the rise of modern Japan. What were the first two places that Japan attacked? It was Russia and China, right? Well, I think that if Japan isn't careful, it could end up as the next Ukraine, as a proxy war of America, and I guess you could include that other little state that America has joined at the hip with, as a proxy war against modern China. Russia, not so
You
much, but
can
I think
throw the
China.
Philippines into the mix and South Korea as well.
And Japanese not being that politically savvy, but you could say that most people in the world, James, they don't look into things too deeply. This war in Palestine, the whole Gaza thing, right? It is a genocide, but you have to be, it's not all black and white, especially when applied to your position, okay? And I will give you an example. Japan, although they're excellent in many areas, they have gaping holes in others. One of them is software and apps. Because, what was the peak of Japanese industry, like famous products, right? You had the cars, but especially like Gen X generation, I'm a Gen X. The Walkman, right? Walkman, Discman, the cassette tape and the CD player, right? Excellent products. They're very good from top to bottom Japanese of handcrafted things of fine quality. But they always put the software engineers at the bottom. The senior engineers were, they worked on the hardware, right? Well, as soon as the iPhone came out, Japan was screwed. Because they treated the junior software engineers like crap, when really now the electronic devices, there's just an interface, and then you just update the software, right? So Japan is, I would say, no joke, they're probably 20 years behind. All of the apps that are coming out in Japan, they're contracted out. They're, a lot of times they're foreign workers, so another area that Japan is lacking in is drones. And we've seen in Ukraine, I think, is the first place where drone warfare was heavily used, right? So going forward, no matter who you are, you will have to contend with drones or have drone capability somehow, right? Japan does not make drones. In fact, as far as I know, the drone usage in Japan is highly restricted because they don't like people. You know, there's a lot of nice parks and temples and such, and they don't want people flying drones everywhere. But that also means you have most Japanese have never had experience using drones. See? And now we come to the political factor. Israel, that country, is very famous for making drones. Turkey also. But that little country in the Middle East, very famous for making drones. So Japan was interested in buying some drones from our friends over there, okay? Major protest from pro-Palestinian activists, right? Okay. Yeah, it's a genocide, but you have to get drones from somewhere. This is the thing. They don't even think at this multidimensional level, right? And guess who's funding a lot of these groups? I would assure you, China's probably funding them. Because they're saying, you know what, good, go protest. And so it stalls out Japan from filling this gap in their defense, right? Do you see what I'm saying? It's like this, because Japanese are so insular and they're not that politically savvy, it's like they don't even see that factor. Because they're not, that's like two, three steps removed from their protesting this particular incident.
Works at a number of levels. For example, if these not so covert sources of funding are pushing a pro-Palestine protest movement, what that does is see what they've managed to do is they've conflated in the minds of really simple-minded people immigration and Palestine, right? Which is ironic because if you look at the behavior of all these Arab states, they've always defecated all over Palestine. They've always turned their back on the Palestinians, et cetera, right? So what they've managed to do is, okay, if you're pro-Palestine, that means you're pro-immigration too, which those are two different things, right? And the powers that be could easily shut down those pro-Palestine demonstrations, like they do with the far right native demonstrations that we just don't want to be hacked to death and we don't want our little girls to be raped and we don't want, to our country to turn into a Sharia state. They've conflated the two, right? So they muddled up in the minds and in the process, the mass slaughter, everything else gets, shoved under the table and all is turned a place into a resort anyway, right? So it's I wouldn't say it's clever how they managed to do that because it's very simple, working on simple-minded people. And a quick point about post-war Japan, and then we could go into a part two where we can really dig deep into this stuff. But if you look at what happened in the occupation of Japan, because you're right. Japan was used by the West. There's a great book about this called The Imperial Cruise. And it talks about how the powers that be were goading essentially Japan into an expansionist policy into Korea, into China, and vis-a-vis Tsarist Russia. They've always hated Tsarist Russia, just like they hate the latest iteration of Russia because it's a Christian state. Of course, they would hate it, right? So, post World War II, Japan is absolutely completely crushed. People were starved. People don't know how bad it got over there. Operation Starvation, the blockade of the Inland Sea with mining from B-29s. I mean, people were starving. Never mind the incessant air raids, what have you. So the Americans and the forces working through America basically had a clean slate, as you know. And what the American left in particular was doing. They were getting on MacArthur's case. He was essentially a proconsul over there, right? Well, do something about the Zaibatsu. Do something about these corporate cartels like the Manchurian Railway Corporation and Mitsubishi, w which use slave labor, right? Which were financing the war effort. Do something about them. No, they didn't. Like he said, they came to an accommodation. If anyone should have been tried as war criminals, it should have been the CEOs and the shareholders of all these corporations that helped finance the. It was their need for raw materials, which pushed the expansion to the south, to Malaya and Indonesia, what have you, for oil and rubber, what have you. So they came to an accommodation with the cartels. They actually used allied prisoners of war as slave labor. And those freed American, British, and Australian soldiers were told, and air crews were told, if you tell anyone, this is what the Americans told them, before they even let them out of Japan. If you tell anyone you've been used as a slave by Mitsubishi and these other corporations, we'll kill you, right? Same thing they told the sailors as you survived the Liberty attack, we'll kill you if you talk about this, right? So they used Japan then as a bulwark, supposedly, against the Soviet Union, right? But really, and you look at how the mass drug influence came in. And it was conveniently blamed on all these GIs, all the occupation. They brought their drugs with them. No, it was very organized. And, this caused massive die-offs of young people in Japan from all the overdoses, from all the drugs that were brought in the wake of the American corporate occupation. So you can very much see, fast forwarding to the present, Japan is being used as a staging base, as essentially another Ukraine. Similar to what they're doing in the Philippines. Now, I'm not a fan of communism, but the Filipinos could have gone two ways. They could have said, "Yeah, we'll go along with the Belt and Road Initiative. We'll build up our country the way the Indonesians and other people have. Well, look what they've got." No, they didn't do that. We're going to stick with the old model of being America's proxy, and then we'll just stay in our third world status, and we, the oligarchs, will be happy and we'll be rich anyway, right? But the rest of the country will suffer as usual because they're going with the old unipolar model. So, yes, I see. And any final thoughts before we shift over in the part two? And folks, things are just getting hot and heavy now.
I just want to touch on the Islamic factor. And I have met, because you got to go by individuals. I've met a German guy, but he's, the face of young Europe, James. It's Arab and African. So he's German nationality, but he was actually the perfect combination of what young Europe is. He was part white German, part Arab, and part Somali. And he grew up a Muslim, but I'll just say he didn't follow all the rules, so he was very loose. He was a very cool, intelligent guy, But we know as a group how it's turned out in other areas. And so one of the ways that they're trying to set precedence cases. So in Japan, the custom is cremation burial because, Japan, it's a large country, but a lot of it is not very usable. It's a lot of mountains. So the areas that where the cities are, the it's not that you're living, you're dealing with a limited space, right? So that's why they do all cremation now. Now the Muslims, they require full body burial. Well, this is a problem because there are no cemeteries in Japan that do this, right? So they're trying to set precedence cases. One of them was actually near one of my family's home towns, a small fishing village in Kyushu, and luckily it got rejected. See, when the residents now wonder when they get wind of it, now they're really pushing back. But it's definitely being funded, so I wouldn't cast this in, oh, it's all the Muslims, it's all the Islamists. The head guy that was in charge of this is an Islamic scholar at Beppu University. So again, you have these academia types, and they're always tenured. They're getting money from Soros or somebody, right? But basically, they're trying to set precedence cases, and then once they have a foothold, then they expand, right? And you're seeing a lot of mosques pop up, and they're doing the prayers in the street and all this kind of stuff. So it's same thing as in Europe. My honest assessment, though, is that I don't think it will get as bad as Europe because the cutoff point seems to be, we've heard this date a lot, 2030. I think there's going to be so many earth changes and the economic collapse between now and then. I just don't think they'll be able to import as many people as they'd like to. And, there's so much to talk about Japan, but I would like to mention this Africa Hometown Project. Did you hear about that? Oh, well, it's actually not the Japanese government. It's an NGO, of course, working with the Japanese government that they proposed four Africa hometowns, which are these dying towns in the middle of nowhere. And it'd be like Ghana Town, Nigeria Town, Mozambique Town, right? Huge pushback. So it got shut down, quote unquote. But what they really did is they just changed the name. And now it's Now they have a map I saw recently. It's eight hometowns plus the India town. So they're still trying to push it. And some of the numbers of immigrants that the Japanese government has signed, like these are deals, 50,000 from India with 500,000, I guess, Japanese and Indian cultural exchanges. So 50,000 Indian migrants into Japan, 500,000 supposed to go back and forth. 100,000 from Bangladesh, and I don't know what other deals they signed, but these are fairly large numbers. And from some of the poorest countries on the planet, that are, if you take a snapshot of Japan, cleanest, one of the cleanest places on earth. Take a snapshot of Bangladesh. I don't see it working, James, but I think the point is it's not supposed to work. It's supposed to cause chaos so they can push whatever other agendas
Ordo
that they
ab
want.
chaos. Ordo ab chaos. That's why I've said for a long time, like the moderate Muslims, however many they may be, they're irrelevant because they're not stopping or they're not discouraging this push for Sharia. Like, for example, in the UK and in Ireland and places, it's very common. They send out circulars to the parents. Don't let your children bring ham sandwiches and bacon sandwiches to school. It's offensive, right? Don't bring your dogs out to certain areas because it's offensive to migrants, et cetera, et cetera. So clearly, there's this supplanting of the native populations. It's ordo out of chaos. And I remember Mother Mary Shipton's prophecy that the world will, Europe will be Islamicized by 2043. And if, barring some kind of nuclear war, mega financial collapse, alien and overt alien invasions, whatever the case may be, all of the above, right? Well, that may happen, but like you just said, I see that there may be things in coming that may disrupt that process. They're just allowing the state of chaos to ensue and snowball, but in the end, they may fail ultimately in what they want to do because, the cosmic universe, nature, everything else, they have their own agenda, right? So anyhow, we reached the end of a fascinating segment with old friend Masaki Miyagawa. Masaki, you want to give the viewing and listening audience contact information in case they want to share anything with you?
Sure. I have a website up. It's Masaki, Masaki dot one, O-N-E. And I'm doing cryptocurrency consultations, kind of hot topic. I'm also been stacking gold and silver. So, that is hitting, I think it's all-time high. It's never been higher. So if people are interested in talking about that, you can contact me there. And I also do numerology readings. So
Very good, by the
Masaki.1.
way. Yes. And that's for dear listeners out there. If you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up and become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next segment.